Hello everyone, and I hope this video finds you well and healthy today. Thank you for being here. Namu myoho renge kyo. I believe we're starting a new Go show today. This one called No Safety in the Threefold World. So, that's a statement of samsara, our human condition. And by safety, I'm sure Nichiren is referring to our enlightenment. So let's see who did he write this to? It's a reply to Matsuno. A letter written from Snowbound Minobu, addressed to a lay monk, Matsuno Rokuro Saimon, a follower who lived in the village of Matsuno in a Hara district of Surugu province. He's Nanjo Tokumitsu's grandfather. Interesting. Apparently diligent in his practice. Several letters exchanged with Nichiren. So he's talking to an elderly man and an avid follower of the Lotus Sutra and Nichiren's elucidation of it. Meaning he's chanting Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, right? So that's important only in helping us understand Nichiren's perspective as he's writing this reply to Matsuno. I'm not quite sure what Matsuno was asking him about, but I'm sure that'll become clear as we read. So, it begins in standard form with these more intimate letters, one-to-one, with a thank you. Basically, it's a Nichiren thank you note that takes advantage of the communication to answer questions and communicate teachings and doctrine and advise his students. I have received the various articles you sent me. Concerned about my life in the mountains, you had your messenger make his way through the snow to call on me. Your sincerity has no doubt been recognized by the Lotus Sutra and the Ten Demon Daughters. So, right away, he starts out by telling this elderly gentleman, who's obviously been studying Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra for many years, and is a very avid supporter, showing his concern for Nichiren's well-being in some of the harshest weather in the time of years, where generally people tend to put aside their connections with others in search of securing their own lives. That's what we do as humans, right? And we forget about others struggling to do the same, especially those with less fortune, earthly fortune anyway, in their lives. Nichiren is totally dependent on the kindness of his students. He has no job. He's the votary in this case, of the Lotus Sutra in his day. So that's where he derives all of his support. So when he thanks these people for their donations, their help, their assistance in any way, he's quite sincere about it. So no wonder it takes front and center in every letter. Their reference to recognized by the Lotus Sutra and the Ten Demon Daughters really is an expression of, really inspiring confidence in the senders, in this case, Matsuno, the elderly gentleman, to let him know that his acts are directly benefiting not just Nichiren in this samsaric world, but Matsuno himself. For this act of generosity, he will incur or accrue greater support, protection, health, whatever he needs at that time to continue to enlighten himself, to continue his practice, which requires his health, his protection, his so on and so forth. So in Buddhism, positive causes, the more positive they are, immediately reflect in our environment and the way that we live our samsaric lives. And this is what's meant when we talk about rewards in Buddhism. It's not like winning a sweepstakes or a lottery. It's a direct result of our own mental life condition, what actions we take in our lives are immediately reflected in our support, our environment. That is one and the same in Buddhism. But we experience it in samsara as something occurring to us. Remember the body-mind disconnect that we have. So, the Nirvana Sutra states, quote, "Human life runs its course more swiftly than a mountain stream. The person here today will not likely be here tomorrow," end quote. The Maya Sutra reads, "Imagine for an instant a flock of sheep being driven by a chandala to the slaughterhouse. Human life is exactly the same. Step by step, one approaches the place of death." The Lotus Sutra states, quote, "There is no safety in the threefold world. It is like a burning house, replete with a multitude of sufferings, truly to be feared." So, these quotes can be misunderstood when you read them in these various sutras as a disdain for life. But you have to be careful in your reading, especially since these are translations, and dig beneath those words to understand what that really means. It's not that Buddhist teachings revile life. It's that they revile samsaric conditions. In other words, we find ourselves as human beings experiencing life through a narrow lens of our desires, our dualities, our egos, self and other, right? The very foundations of our existence as humans is our avarice for possession, ownership, which implies along with it a permanence, a realization of something as a permanent acquisition. And that's where Buddhism describes or is translated as describing this incredible bond of attachment to things, to everything as a possession. In order to possess something, you have to continue to possess it, right? It's like grabbing air. Where as humans, we're trying constantly to say, this is my air, this is not your air, right? We even use these terms in legal regulation, you know. You're in my airspace. I'm buying the air rights over a building. We're so obsessed with ownerships and possession. And those are all mechanisms of hanging on to things in their present form as though it somehow is a permanent thing. Because possession requires permanence, doesn't it? Right? Whatever air you just put your hand around, it's no longer there. To possess it means that you're forcing a perception of a stasis of things, that they stay in their particular whatever it is we're imagining. And that's simply not the case. Not in Buddhism, and certainly not scientifically. The whole science of archaeology is about looking for traces of things that have long gone. We know things are not permanent. Intellectually, we know it, but our entire body is, on a cellular level, is about maintaining permanence. our bodies themselves know this is not a true thing because we continue to manufacture new cells to replace old cells so that we can maintain this idea of what? Self? What self? The self a moment ago? The self about to be now? Which self are we maintaining? The only thing we're maintaining is a experience, a timeline, if you will, a progression of moment to moment experience. That collectively is what we think of as an existence. It is always fluid. It's constantly changing. And so what's reviled here in these statements isn't that process. It's not that process of life. In fact, that's what's revered in Buddhism, because it is through that process that we can conceptualize and perceive that process at work. Ripped away from that obsession with permanence. It's a very hard divide. The thing that makes us human is the thing that makes us suffer. So we don't want to get rid of that because we honor it for the opportunity it gives us, but we want to break free, or in the Buddhist translations, liberate ourselves from that condition, that mental condition formed of attachment and obsession with hanging on to things, with accruing things. We rather want to watch that process at a distance, recognize it for what it is, and then look around calmly at what it provides, how it's working, how amazing it is to experience the experience. Does that make sense? This is the liberation from suffering, because suffering comes at the hands of our obsessive obtainium, right? Our possession, our possessionness. So don't misunderstand that. And this quote from the Lotus Sutra, there is no safety in the threefold world. What's safety in this? In other words, from moment to moment in the threefold world, in the past, present, or future world, that samsaric identification of permanence is itself not safety. It's not safe because it's an illusion. It's not real. What's real is everything's in constant flux. So the idea that there's a, in the threefold world, in that possessiveness of possession and maintaining permanence, is unsafe. So there is no safety in the threefold world, that mental conditioning. It is like a burning house. Now remember, this refers back to the story in the Lotus Sutra of the burning house, where the children are in the house and many, and the father is lamenting from outside, how can I get my children out of the burning house? Because they're so preoccupied with playing with their toys that they'd rather stay in the house in the fire playing with their toys than recognize their own safety and come the hell out of there. And so he entices them with some other gifts if they'll just come out of the house. Remember that parable? So this is like the Buddhist teachings. We're stuck in our samsaric mindset and just enjoying our possession of things and people and conditions and all of that. Meanwhile, we're constantly suffering. We don't recognize that we're creating our own suffering. And so the Buddha, through expedient means, gives us this promise of much greater prizes, rewards, if we'll just come out of that samsaric mindset. And so we begin to study Buddhism and we chant, and the rewards we get are so far beyond the paltry things that we thought we were going to get, that what we gain is actually losing our profound attachment to that samsaric mindset. What we gain then is an entirely new perspective and appreciation and a depth of experience of our life through our Buddha-ness, that our desires shift completely from possessions and obsessions to maintaining this awesome experience of life without time. See, if you get rid of time, then possession has no meaning. If you get rid of time, then things and ownership and permanence are ridiculous children's toys. Do you see the thinking? Replete, a burning house, replete with a multitude of sufferings, truly to be feared. Do you understand now what's to be feared? It's not the threefold world itself. It's the threefold world as a conjuring of samsaric conditioning that's to be feared. You need to leave that just bundle of sufferings behind and elevate your perspective. You already do. You're just unaware because you're so obsessed with possession, right? The human condition, as it were. In these passages from the sutras, our compassionate father, the world-honored one of great enlightenment, admonishes us, the ordinary people of the latter age. It is his warning to us, his ignorant children. Nevertheless, the people do not awaken for even one instant, nor do they conceive a desire to attain the way for even a single moment, in order to decorate their bodies, which, if adorned in the fields, if abandoned in the fields, would be stripped naked overnight. They spend their time striving to pile up articles of clothing. This is exactly what I was just describing. This obsession with ownership keeps them glued to this samsaric suffering. When their lives come to an end, he continues, within 3 days their bodies will turn into water that washes away, into dust that mixes with the earth, and into smoke that rises up into the sky, leaving no trace behind. Nevertheless, they seek to nurture these bodies and to amass great wealth. And this goes back to something I started talking about, and I have talked about in the past, how you could say that our samsaric tendencies is a continuous fetishizing of this body. Look at any religion in the world, and you will find that they are elaborate rituals centered around the body. Think about it. And our desire and our obsession to own, to possess, is all a perverse method of validation, of glorification, of putting on a pedestal our self, body, ego, avarice, all of the things that keep us in our human chase for the next great thing. Right? This is the human condition. As consumerists in the world today, this has to be so obvious. Gotta have the next iPhone. This one's no good. We're trained. And who trained us? We did. Right? This is the human condition. There's always something better, always something more. But I don't want to lose what I've got, right? Bring that along. Hoarders, right? There must be something of value here when all the value is in your mind. This is what is meant by the burning house. What good is a burning house? What good is a house? It, in fact, is burning, even if there's no fire, because it will, right? It arises and it decays and it falls away and it goes away. It's nothing is permanent. This obsession is what creates all of our suffering, our angst about having the next one, not being left behind, about having, amassing, you know, this obsession with wealth. You know, sometimes I think Jeff Bezos must be the most miserable man in the world. He can't possibly get enough. How lamentable. Somebody needs to shakabuku him. This principle, he goes on, Nichiren, has been known since ancient times. But today the situation is pitiable. And this is in 13th century. The country of Japan has been visited by continuous famine for the last several years, and supplies of food and clothing are exhausted. The domestic animals have all been consumed, and persons who eat human flesh are appearing. Oh my God. They tear flesh from the bodies of the dead, children, and the sick, mix it with fish or deer meat, and sell it. Ugh. People purchase this mixture and eat it. Do you remember the movie? You may be too young to remember Soylent Green, but that's what this reminds me of. Thus, this country has unwittingly become an abode of great evil demons. And the life condition is just descended completely into the perversion of self, the body. Moreover, from the spring of last year through the middle of the second month of this year, epidemics have spread throughout the country. In 5 families out of 10, in 50 households out of 100, all the members have died from disease. Others have escaped illness but are suffering from great spiritual distress and thus are in even greater agony than those who are ill. Even the people who managed to survive have lost the children who used to follow them as closely as shadows, or the spouses from whom they had been as inseparable as a pair of eyes, or the parents upon whom they had relied as they would upon heaven and earth. For them, what meaning does life hold? How could sensible people not abhor this world? Again, this isn't about a death cult. Buddhism is not about the body. It is, though, about abhorring the existence that is about the body, right? That samsaric obsession. Buddhism abhors that because that's where the source of all suffering is. That's what that means. Don't be confused, okay? The Buddha taught that there is no safety in the threefold world, but the current state of affairs seems excessively tragic. Although I myself am only an ordinary person, I informed the ruler that the Buddha had left behind teachings predicting such a situation. However, he did not heed my admonitions, but rather began to persecute me even more harshly, so there was nothing further I could do. This country has already become a slanderer of the law. And by turning into an enemy of the Lotus Sutra, it has also made itself an enemy of the Buddhas and the deities of the three existences and the 10 directions. So, much as he started this letter by saying, with your good causes, your good actions, your life-affirming actions, you will enjoy protection and prosperity. Well, I don't want to say prosperity because especially in the West, conflate that with dollars and whether they're US dollars or Bitcoin. Profit, in other words. This isn't about profit. But by the same token, no pun intended, bad causes, bad actions, ignorant actions bring about immediate response from your environment that are not life-affirming, right? Please consider deeply. No matter what grave crimes I, Nichiren, have been charged with, I am a votary of the Lotus Sutra. Notice this says, I am a votary of the Lotus Sutra, not the votary. It's important to understand that Nichiren's always referring to himself as a common man, just like you and I, or woman, whatever, but just a common human. That what he's doing, practicing his actions, are exceptional. Only because by virtue of the excellence of the teachings of the Lotus Sutra. And that is the point throughout. That if you just adopt the thinking of the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo, your life has no choice but to improve. Your earthly existence will improve. Why? Because your mental conditioning will start to leave behind obsession for thingness and start to move toward realization of Buddha. Please consider deeply, no matter what grave crimes I have done, I am the votary of the Lotus Sutra, just like you and I. No matter what grave crimes a person who chants Namu Amida Butsu may be guilty of, it cannot be denied that he is a follower of the Nembutsu. Because I chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo with my own mouth, I have been reviled, struck, exiled, and my life threatened. However, in spite of all of this, I've continued to exhort others to do likewise. Am I not then the votary of the Lotus Sutra? In the Lotus Sutra, it is stipulated that those who bear a grudge against its votary are destined to fall into the Avicii hell. Well, look what's happening, right? The fourth volume states that the offense of harboring malice toward a votary of the Lotus Sutra in the latter age is graver than that of reviling the Buddha himself for an entire medium kalpa. The seventh volume teaches that people who disparage the votary will suffer in the Avicii hell for 1,000 kalpas. The fifth volume states that after the Buddha's passing, when the latter day of the law arrives, a votary of the Lotus Sutra will certainly appear, and that at that time, in that country, an immeasurably great multitude of monks who either uphold or violate the precepts will gather and denounce the votary to the ruler of the country, causing him to be banished and ruined. This is in anticipation of the great ignorance of our day. Because at no time in history has humankind been more distracted and more appealed to his lesser nature of obsession, cruelty, upsmanship, possession, power, ego. Right? I mean, I don't have to give you examples. My goodness, it's everywhere you look. These passages from the sutra all coincide precisely with what has happened to me. I am therefore convinced that I will attain Buddhahood in my future. I will speak in more detail when we meet. So, very interesting. I'm sure Nanjo Tokumitsu's grandfather, Matsuno, you know, I can speak from my own experience and with my mother and my partner's mother, both in their mid-80s, and I in my 60s. As we get older, we spend more time reflecting on what life is essential. What is the essence of my life? How I've lived it? less about others and more about a turning inward. And I can imagine that Matsuno had some questions for Nichiren about, although I've been a follower of yours for X amount of years, I wasn't always a follower of yours. And I've done some really, I mean, all of us have regrets. Even if you're a young person, I'm sure you can think back to 10 years ago when you thought, when you're embarrassed at many of the things that you were either involved in or actually did yourself. We could spend way too much time focusing on that. And I'm just as guilty as anyone else. And sometimes I feel myself just wanting to cry at the ignorance. But so, and also Nichiren's talking about his own. Maybe Matsuno had some doubts, you know, with everything you've gone through, Nichiren. I question if I'm, you know, maybe he was having doubts about his own practice. We do that too, right? So Nichiren is once again, from the sutras, the teachings themselves, demonstrating that this is just part of our human nature. We're always ready to destroy whatever we've accomplished in favor of just accruing more stuff. Our avarice never ends. Even in our practice, have I done enough daimoku? How much daimoku do I need to do to get this enlightenment thing? And all the while, our lives are improving. And we fail to realize how much better our quality of life is. And I think a part of that is that we fail to recognize where it would be without daimoku. We just take everything immediately for granted. The moment we possess something, it ceases to have value other than an accrual. It's a fascinating thing that goes on in our minds. But I sit here with over 40 years of experience doing this, and I'm telling you, even if your practice has waned, don't beat yourself up for it. Just get back to it. It's like you need to prove to yourself, oh yeah, I do feel better now. I need to keep doing this. Don't forget that. You know, don't look down on people who are struggling with their practice. They obviously need more proof. And sometimes the only proof we get of our ability to walk around and stay upright is occasionally falling down and skinning the heck out of our knees or breaking a leg, injuring ourselves. And then all of a sudden, oh my goodness, it's so great to be able to walk around normally again. And a week later, we're jumping off roofs. That's that samsaric, right? There's no safety in the threefold world. That's what this is about. You've got to work to keep your mind in Buddha. Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, this moment, enlightenment, this next moment, not. You got to keep that moment alive. You got to give it inertia to take you through the next moments. And believe me, it's there. It's just like taking a good drink of some beverage that you love, and a moment later you're thirsty. Well, that's just because that's the threefold world we're in. Constantly meeting up with the monkeys, right? You need to have confidence. You need to build your confidence so that you know, oh, I'm struggling right now, but thank goodness I'll have a few moments or an hour tonight of quiet time that I can just do gongyo and chant, and I always feel so good. I have to tell you, doing these videos is the highlight of my day. It's in a way, it's a sort of gongyo. This is a ritual for me to study, to renew my study, to share my study with you. I get some bodhisattva time in. I get some practicing time in. I get some awakening and insight time in. Every time I read these Gosho, I get a little bit more out of it because my life keeps progressing. With every daimoku, with every moment I spend with my mandala and you guys and these sutras and goshos and study and my thoughts about them, I keep my mind focused on Myoho Renge Kyo, on my Buddhahood. And when I leave this, I feel it. I know it. As my day progresses, I hear myself say things or I feel myself experience things and I think, I need to get back. I need to get back to Buddha. I need to get back. Myoho Renge Kyo. I've developed these habits unintentionally, that when I'll see something that looks tragic or somebody else or that could be, I don't know, all the tricks my mind plays on what I see and experience, and just Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I without thinking, I just do it, and it comforts me, and it puts things in perspective, right? Build your confidence. If it's not these gosho, then let it be sutra. If it's books outside of the Buddhist canon, from as long as it's scholarship, you know, reputable people, understand they're all going to come to this with their own mindset. So be prepared for different rhetoric about the same thing, but in a way that can be very nurturing because it allows you to create your own rhetoric. Not to tell others so much as for you to gain insight. When you gain insight through something, your own personal story about the Buddhist teachings, that gives you insight, that takes you to mandala, that inspires you to chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Those kinds of insight that build your confidence in this practice, those are the things specific to you and that others will hear from you because they're genuine. They're genuine proof. That's what we mean by actual proof. When you get those insights, they're yours, but because people are attracted to your karmic energy and their karmic energy attracts them to you, they are receptive to those insights. They will get their own, but your insights will be a pathway to their getting their own insight. This is the Bodhisattva practice. This is what's so important in the Lotus Sutra, is not only to chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, but the Sangha, to share it with those in your environs, because they are of similar karmic energies. And so you can expand your Buddha nature through your Bodhisattva acts. And your surroundings will, as we've just read, support your practice. Next, that's the end of that letter. The next one will be letter to Misawa. I'm sure it will have a different type of encouragement, but all of them feed our knowledge, right? Get rid of that ignorance. Build confidence in your practice. That is key. How can you deepen your resolve, your determination to attain your Buddha if you don't have confidence? Right? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. I so much appreciate your participation. Don't forget, you can download the podcast, the Buddhahood podcast. As I say, sometimes I get tired of hearing it. that whole YouTuber thing. You already know it. I've got the placards in the video. Don't forget to go, though, to my resource website if you just need something random to study or if you have a specific question. Likely, I have a paper posted there. From threefoldlotus.com, you can find links to my books, to Gohanzon, anything you need to support your practice. And if there's something missing there for your practice, email me, let me know, and I'll work on making that available to you. I don't want you to have any obstacles in your practice. Not that I can provide anyway. All right? You take care of your health. Take care of your confidence and your practice, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.